This is the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast brought to you by Art Wiederman, CPA with Ide Bailey. Whether it's taxes and investing or planning wisely, Art is the expert to make your dental practice profitable. At Ide Bailey, what inspires you inspires us. We provide a suite of accounting and advisory services dedicated to the total care of your practice. Visit our website to access our tools and resources tailored for dentists, idebailey.com/dentist. That's idebailey.com/dentist. This podcast is distributed with the understanding that Art Wiederman, CPA, and Ide Bailey, LLP are not rendering legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Listeners should consult with their business advisors before acting on any of the information or opinions shared. If you have questions and or feedback, make sure to email Art over at awiederman@idebailey.com. That's A-W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N at E-I-D-E-B-A-I-L-L-Y.com. You can also give Art a call at 657-279-3243. Without further delay, here's your host, Dental CPA Art Wiederman.
And hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast with Art Wiederman, CPA. I'm your host, Art Wiederman, and welcome to my podcast, this beautiful March day here in Southern California. And one of the hot topics I've been talking about in my lectures and to my clients, and we get calls all the time about this is, hey, what about this? You know, should I look at selling my practice to a DSO? Should I look at selling to a big group practice? You know, what does that look like? I'm talking to my friends at the dental societies. I'm talking to people in the industry, and this is happening. The statistics I've heard are that anywhere in the neighborhood of 25 to 35% of the dental profession is now been, we'll use the term consolidated, meaning that dental practice owners have sold to larger DSOs, and private equity is very involved. And our guest today is an expert in the field. He lives in this field every single day. It's Chip Fitchner. We've had Chip on before from Large Practice Sales. We're going to talk to Chip about the why of, you know, should you sell your practice to a DSO? What are they buying? What are they looking for? What does the market look like? How does he structure the deals that he works with his clients? He's been very, very successful at what he does for many, many dentists. So we'll get to Chip in a moment. I think it'll be really great information for you because it is a very hot topic in the dental profession today. But first, I want to invite you to go to our partner Decisions in Dentistry magazine to their website at www.decisionsindentistry.com. They have over 140 continuing education classes that they provide to their clients and to dentists across the nation. At a very, very reasonable cost. And they now have three more, which I would encourage you to look at. There's this guy named Art Wiederman who has a podcast called The Art of Dental Finance and Management with Art Wiederman CPA. You might even be listening to him right now. He has published on Decisions in Dentistry's website three financial live learning video courses. One of them is on Art's Golden Rules of Financial Planning. One of them is on the metrics of a dental practice and the numbers of a dental practice. And then the last one is on retirement and retirement planning. I'm very proud of these three video classes, and I would invite you to take a look at them on the website at www.decisionsindentistry.com. If you are looking for a dental-specific CPA, you found them. I am a dental division director with the CPA firm of Ide Bailey. We're the 19th largest CPA firm in the country. And I compare working to Ide Bailey in the same way that I compare you having in your dental office access to Frank Spear, John Coyce, the Pankey Institute, David Hornbrook, and all Gordon Christensen, all the big names. I have access to every single thing that a dentist would probably ever need cybersecurity consulting, financial planning, cost segregation. So we're very proud of the work we do at iBailey. If you are not getting from your CPA good advice, you can't talk to your CPA about what's going on in your dental practice. They don't know what a CEREC machine is. They don't know the difference between medial and distal. You might want to give me a call or send me an email. My email is awiederman@iBailey.com. That's awiederman@iBailey.com. And or call me at 657-279-3243. The last thing I want to tell you about before we bring Chip on to the program is you might have heard about this thing that came out called the Corporate Transparency Act. And if you haven't heard about it, you need to look it up and you need to talk to your attorney about it. This is legislation that requires everybody who owns an entity that is covered by this. And that's most of you. That's an S corporation. It's a corporation, LLC, LLP. If you own real estate, you are going to be required to file information with the folks at what's called FinCEN, which are the same people that if you have a foreign bank account, you file information with. There's been a lot of controversy about this. There's been a lot of talk about it. There's even been a court case that has said that the government can't do this. But here's what I'm going to tell you very specifically. If you have set up an entity that is covered by this act in 2024, technically, as I understand it, you have 90 days from the day that entity becomes an official entity in your state to file this information. If you don't, there are ginormous, as my mother used to say, ginormous penalties for not complying. If you set up an entity before 2024, the beginning of 2024, you have a while to do this. But we as CPAs are not preparing these forms. There's not a tax form. There's no tax information on it. So this is something that you must go to your corporate attorney and say, hey, I heard this guy named Wiederman on a podcast talking about the Corporate Transparency Act. Can you tell me if I have to do anything? And that is what you need to do. Again, we CPAs are not advising on this other than to say, go talk to your corporate attorney.
Be sure to check out our new iBailey podcast, Ebb and Flow, a business podcast providing inspired insight on issues and trends the middle market faces. Hear unique business stories, get answers to frequently asked and unasked questions, and understand business topics that matter to you. Available now on your favorite podcast platform.
All right. With that said, folks, I want to get to my guest today, Chip Fitchner. So Chip is the co-founder and principal of a company called Large Practice Sales. Chip is every day of his life is involved in helping doctors to transition their practices to larger groups, corporate equity group, backed groups. He lives and breathes in this marketplace, and that's why we have him on the program. Chip is completed, and his company has completed more than $1 billion. That's a billion with a B, $1 billion of practice transitions in 2022 and 2023, with 38 what he calls IDSOs, which I believe stands for invisible DSOs. And I will let him talk about that as we bring him on here in 31 states. He's built and bought and sold companies in a variety of industries. And he has been featured in many media outlets, many podcasts. You may have heard him before. And as his bio says, which I'm going to ask him about here in a minute, his tolerant wife of 33 years allows him to live on airplanes, visiting clients every week. So, Chip, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Art. Appreciate you having me. Great to talk to you.
So explain to me what a tolerant wife of 33 years looks like.
You know, I am ultimately at my core a salesman, and I managed to sell this beautiful girl some 40 years ago on dating and marrying me, and it's worked out pretty good. She stuck with me through thick and thin for 40 years. So it's the key. It's just like finding an invisible DSO partner. You have to choose wisely. And I got lucky and I did.
Well, you and me both. I'm coming up in about 2 months on my 39th wedding anniversary. And what I've learned is that the two most important words in the English language are yes, dear. And that works very well for me. So probably for you too.
Yep. I know those two words well.
Well, Chip, take a second. Tell us a little bit about your professional journey and how you formed the company, and we'll get into the discussion.
Fantastic. Well, for the last 40 some odd years, I've been really an entrepreneur, buying, selling, starting, taking public, monetizing businesses across a number of industries. At one point, I had started and built the world's largest aftermarket windshield wiper manufacturer for cars. And I sold that business many years ago. And I got into dentistry about 13 years ago when a friend of mine who was a venture capitalist had invested in a dental-related company. He asked me to look at it because he thought that their sales should be higher, and I did. And he said, well, can you help me? I said, no, but I'll buy the company from you. And so I did. And we built that company and sold it. And in that process, one of our clients from that dental company came to me and said, hey, Chip, would you help me sell my practice? I'm ready to hang it up. And I said, well, I don't know anything about selling dental practices, but if you'll pay me enough, I'll learn. And he had a 18-office multi-specialty group, and we found him a great buyer at close to $50 million. And he paid me the agreed fee. And I thought, hey, you know what? Maybe this is a business. And so my partner, Matt Wilkins, and I started this business 7 years ago. And we made two really bright decisions early on. Number one, we said we're only going to focus on larger practices. And number two, we're only going to get paid by our doctor clients. Pretty much everybody else in the practice advisory business, or they call it the transition business, gets paid by both the buyer and the seller. We don't. We only represent doctors, and therefore our sole interest is in achieving the highest value with the best partner for our clients, because they're the ones who pay us if we complete a deal. And the good news is, if you go through our process and we don't find you a partner that you like, you don't do a deal and you pay us nothing. So it's an exciting business because it's been growing rapidly thanks to the massive amount of capital that has been flowing into the invisible DSOs over the last several years.
Well, we're going to talk about
that. Exciting time to be a dentist.
Yeah, I say that too. And absolutely, you know, dentistry has been so recession proof. And I mean, I remember in 2008, Chip, you know, my dentists, maybe they were down 5 or 10%, but they all mostly stayed in business. And then the pandemic, everybody stayed in business, and it's a great profession. And I'm honored to have been involved in it for Labor Day will be 40 years. But let's get into what the marketplace looks like. I know, you know, here from, and I don't live in it like you do, but I do, you know, talk to people, you know, every week about what's going on. And, you know, interest rates are a little higher, but what I've learned is that everything changes. It seems like it changes every week. And my understanding, there's 500 or more DSOs out there buying practices and new ones being formed. And so what does the marketplace look like? If my dentist listener out there has got a practice and he's thinking, God, I went to the dental society, I talked to my buddy, he just did this. And then I talked to somebody else, I talked to an equipment rep, and they said that their clients are doing this. What does the market look like right now? What are you telling your clients who are coming to you and saying, let's look at this?
You know, it's really interesting. The DSO business has been around for 35 or more years, and invisible DSOs have been around for 35 years. And so today there are roughly 1,000 DSOs or invisible DSOs out there eager to partner with doctors.
Yeah, okay. About 1,000. I hear different numbers, but 1,000 is, yeah, okay.
And you know, there are different estimates on how many doctors have partnered with an invisible DSO or sold to a DSO. The ADA's most current number is 13% of all dentists in the U.S. are affiliated with or work for a DSO or invisible DSO. Yeah. And keep in mind, there are far more invisible DSOs than regular DSOs. And we'll talk about the difference there. But the ADA also said in that same report that about 18% of orthodontists are affiliated with a DSO or invisible DSO. Other data would say that it's higher than that, but I'm going to use the ADA's numbers since they're the experts.
Right. So what are you seeing as far as, I mean, I know, you know, interest rates are higher, which private equity is, you know, a lot of them are borrowing money to do these deals. So that is a, you know, that's one thing to consider. How are the deals being with today's economy? What are you seeing in the marketplace? I mean, are we doing a lot of deals? Are people backing off? Are there still really good deals to be had?
You know, it's interesting. It's we are still setting record values for practices every day. As recently as the deal we closed yesterday at 11.8 times EBITDA, which is an extraordinary number. That practice 3 years ago might have been worth 8 times EBITDA. So if you have the right practice and you're the right age and you're growing, your practice is going to set a new record value. And it doesn't matter whether it's GP or pedo or ortho or perio or oral surgery or endo or implant focused. There are more bidders today for great practices than there were a year ago, despite higher interest rates. Because what's happened is there are certain invisible DSOs that have been heavily impacted by higher interest rates, and that has stopped them partnering with new partners. But that has been replaced by the massive amount of capital that has flowed into the invisible DSO space. Not DSO, but invisible DSO. So to put that in perspective, year to date, so in the last, call it 75 days, there's been over $3.3 billion of new capital invested in invisible DSOs. And some of that was going into existing invisible DSOs, and some of that was going into new startup invisible DSOs. But the amount of capital that has flowed into this that's not impacted by interest rates has been dramatic. And one of the fallacies I want to clear up here is that every doctor, for some reason, thinks that private equity is the only thing driving the money in this business, and that is not true. Certainly, private equity is a large investor in the DSOs and invisible DSOs. KKR, the world's third largest private equity firm, for example, owns Heartland with 1,700 offices. But just in the last 3 years, we've done over $400 million of transactions with invisible DSOs that were not backed by private equity. You know, some of the other investors today in this include the world's largest asset manager, BlackRock, with $10 trillion under management. They have invested in two invisible DSOs in the last 14 months. The third largest sovereign wealth fund in the world, which is from the country of Abu Dhabi, dipped their toe into the water with a $1 billion investment in a legacy invisible DSO that's been around for 30 years. And family offices have been investing billions of dollars in dental consolidation over the last 4 years. So there's a lot of money coming into it, and it's not just private equity.
So I think it's time before we go much further for you to define for our audience, because you've been using the term invisible DSO, which I know you use, and that's a lot of what you do at Large Practice Sales. Tell us what an invisible DSO is.
Sure. So a traditional DSO is typically one that acquires or builds and owns 100% of a practice. And they have doctors that are employees. They may have a profit incentive, but they are not true equity holders. They are not owners. And the DSOs operate their practices in a homogenized fashion, in that they are going to tell you what to do and how to do it and when to be open and who to hire and who to fire and what products to use or not use and what labs to use or not use. Whereas the invisible DSOs are completely different. Invisible DSOs do not own 100% of any practices. What they do is become the silent partner with a great doctor by buying anywhere from 51 to 80% of the practice for cash up front. The doctor retains ownership in the balance and continues to lead the practice with the doctor's brand, team, strategy, and full autonomy for years or decades. So the invisible DSO is able to provide their partner doctors with the resources of a larger group, and those resources will vary based on the invisible DSO you partner with. But virtually all of them are going to take over a lot of the administrative minutiae for the doctor and his team, enabling them to focus on patient care, growth, et cetera. And most importantly, they are able to do things for their partner doctors that the independent doctors can't match. And as a couple of examples, they're paying 25% less for pretty much everything in that practice, whether it's supplies or team benefits. They're also, in many cases, getting reimbursed at higher rates from insurance payers because the invisible DSOs have leverage with the payers and have been able to negotiate reimbursement rates. We've seen some recently where they're 20% higher than what our clients were getting reimbursed at. So you're getting a significant change in the industry in that the invisible DSO partnered practices, which you have in your community, you may not know it because they don't go make an announcement, hey, big company just partnered with Dr. Jones down the street. Instead, they stealthily come in. Really, the only people who know that the doctor has a partner are the team members because their paychecks start coming from someplace else. And it's a great partnership opportunity for doctors to grow their practice with fewer administrative headaches, but they're not losing their autonomy. They still make the decisions who to hire, who to fire, when to be open, what schedules to work, what procedures to do, what labs to use, et cetera. These groups have no interest in trying to homogenize their practices. They invest in great practices that are uniquely successful for whatever unique formula the doctor has created in his community. And they certainly don't want to change the brand because that's the goodwill, that's the value of the practice in any community is that doctor and his brand. So they're very different animals. And the good news is the invisible DSOs are paying much higher values for practices than the traditional DSOs. And part of that is because they're buying the doctor's commitment to work for another at least 5 years in many cases, sometimes shorter. But they're entering into a partnership. And the good news is that equity piece that the doctor retained goes up in value. And when you choose the right invisible DSO partner, the equity increase in value can be dramatic. And when I say dramatic, I mean 2, 3, 5 times the initial value of their equity has not been unusual over the last 10 years for doctors who have partnered with invisible DSOs. And in some cases, it's dramatically higher. We have one client we did a deal for 6.5 years ago, and he kept $2 million of ownership as a part of his deal. And he got $3 million in cash, $2 million in ownership. And today, his $2 million in ownership is worth somewhere north of $15 million. So he's seen a 7.5 times increase.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, not bad.
The good news is
on that one, that same group we've partnered dozens of clients with over the last 6 years, and they've all seen the same kind of returns, not quite to the 7.5x, but because it's about timing of when you get into these, but it happens. If you choose wisely, the upside in these is really impressive.
So I want to understand one point as we're talking about when your doctors partner with these invisible DSOs. I know that when you sell to a DSO, whether it's a regular or an invisible DSO, they get a bunch of cash up front, like you were saying, or a portion, 51% to 80%. Talk to me about what happens to the rest of the practice. I know that you can either retain ownership in your current practice and be partner with your invisible DSO, or they could receive equity in what I like to call the mothership, which is what down the road is going to get, sold up at a multiple. How do you normally structure those deals? Or is it done both ways? Is it normally they just keep equity in their practice? How does that work?
It depends on what the doctor wants. Any of our clients will have three different equity retention options. Number one is retain ownership directly in your practice. And when you do that, you're betting on the success of your practice and you're going to get your pro rata piece of the profits of the practice paid to you, typically monthly or quarterly. Option two is, as you said, to retain ownership in the mothership. And at that point, you're betting on the success of the group, not just the success of your practice alone. And the third option is you retain ownership both at the practice and at the mothership. And so you're making two different bets there. You're betting on yourself and your own practice, plus you're betting on the success of the group. So three different equity retention options for a typical client.
Okay, let's talk about, and that's great information, Chip. Thank you very much. So What type of a dentist who has a single practice or maybe one or two locations or whatever, what type of a practice is a candidate to be acquired by one of these groups? And then we'll get into who isn't, I guess, by default. What are they looking for?
You know, they're all looking for something similar in that they're looking for practices that are going to have a minimum of $1.5 million in collections. They're looking for practices that are growing, and the most valuable practices today are practices that are owned by younger doctors. And that's been a huge change since COVID. So in the last $1 billion of transactions in the last 24 months that we have closed, over 150 million of those were for doctors in their 30s, which is a dramatic shift because everybody only thinks about DSOs or invisible DSOs when they're thinking about retirement. Well, I'm telling you that the number of younger doctors that we're completing transactions for is staggering. But sort of put it in perspective, in the last week, we've completed over $50 million of transactions for doctors all under the age of 45.
Why? Why do you think doctors that are maybe 5 years out of school, 10 years out of school in their 30s, what's the why as to why the younger doctors are going this route as opposed to just staying in private practice their whole career?
Well, you know, there's several reasons, and it's very personal to the doctors. A number of the younger doctors that we've done transactions for recently, the primary driver was they wanted to offload the administrative minutia burden of operating their practice. The invisible DSOs will take over banking, accounting, payroll, benefits, benefits administration, compliance, credentialing, tax, legal, IT support, and vendor and payer negotiations. So the doctor frees up a lot of the administrative time, and they get to spend more time with their young families. They've built successful practices. They've got kids that are getting older every day. And so there are many doctors who are young that are doing it to be able to spend time with their kids. That's number one. Number two, it's a great diversification strategy because when you're young, your primary asset really is your practice. And so you have the ability to monetize a part of your life's work for cash up front at today's low 20% federal tax rates. And you can diversify with that liquidity into other investments. You still have ownership in your practice. You're still running your practice. You're still getting cash flow from your practice. But now you have a couple of million or tens of millions of dollars that you can go invest in other things. And that's number two. And I think number three is the doctors are now seeing the upside equity potential in these transactions where they can actually create generational wealth if they choose the right partner. They can take that $2 million in equity and see it become $15 million in 10 years. And so it's a combination of all of the elements, but the younger doctors are beginning to realize that this is the wave of the future, and competing with the invisible DSOs is going to become more difficult because they're not the branded guys down the street you can pick on. They're actually the guys you went to school with down the street that are now partnered with invisible DSOs and are paying 25% less for everything and getting reimbursed at higher rates. So there's a lot of compelling reasons for doctors of all ages to at least understand this option. It's not right for everybody, but it's certainly right. Something every doctor should learn about.
So I want to take a second and let you tell our audience a little bit about, you know, what you guys do at Large Practice Sales. I know there's 1,000, you said there's 1,000 DSOs. That's I believe it. I hear numbers all over the place. You know, using someone like you guys, talk a little bit about your company, what you do, and then I want you to give out your contact information. And if you want to get a hold of Chip, I'm sure he'd be happy to talk to you. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, you know, what we do is specialize in finding doctors, great partners that are the right cultural fit for them. Certainly, we create a bidding process among multiple qualified invisible DSOs, and that drives up value. We generally won't take a client unless we've identified 6 qualified bidders for that client. And the benefit to the doctor of that is it gives them the opportunity to understand 6 different options, or in some cases more. We had one oral surgery practice last year with 18 qualified bidders. But when you have multiple bidders, it's not just about driving up the value, all that's a great thing. But more importantly, it's a cultural fit. Who do you want to spend the balance of your career with? What kind of people? Do you share the same vision, goals, values? And it's important to look at all of your options, because any great practice today is going to have multiple options in partnership. And any larger practice is getting bombarded by the invisible DSOs every day, wanting to partner with them and wanting the doctor to do a deal directly with them. Because when they do that, they can pay far less for a practice than going through a bidding contest that we run. So functionally, what we do is we handle everything for the doctor from the day they become a client to the day they put cash in their pockets. And that process is going to take 6 to 7 months, depending on a lot of different factors. But it's a very valuable process for the doctor to become educated on their options and choose wisely. Because unfortunately, out of those 1,000 invisible DSOs and DSOs out there, we consider less than 100 of them to be qualified to bid on our clients. The other 900 are on what we call the blacklist. The blacklist are, and the blacklist changes every week. We have a meeting once a week to figure out who's going on and who's coming off, because some groups go on to the blacklist for a number of reasons. And in many cases, they come off the blacklist. So I'll give you two ways to get on the blacklist recently. We had a group that we've been partnering practices with for probably 5 years, and they had run out of capital, therefore they couldn't grow. Well, fortunately, so they were on the blacklist when they were out of capital. Fortunately, they got a new $400 million investment earlier this year, and they are now off the blacklist. Another example is a big invisible DSO that in 16 through 19, we probably partnered $300 million of practices with them. They went on the blacklist because their new investor changed the entire senior management. CEO, CFO, COO, CBO, every C-level title was replaced. And so we're waiting to see what the new management is going to do with that group before we allow them to bid on our clients. And so we kind of have insider knowledge on who the good ones are and who the not so good ones are, because many of these, unfortunately, will fail. When you have a boom like we're having now with massive amounts of capital, you've got to choose very wisely. And we like the groups who have the right money behind them, who have experience in healthcare consolidation and or dental consolidation. Because there are some of the investors out there who have created and monetized 7, 8, 9 different invisible DSOs very successfully. There's one investor who has done it 7 times and returned over $3 billion to their investors and their doctor partners. So those are the kind of guys you want to work with, rather than the guys who, yeah, I've got $500 million to invest, but I've never done healthcare consolidation or dental consolidation. And we don't think our clients should have to go through the experience of learning with them. We want to make sure that our clients are partnering with the right partners. There's plenty of money out there, but it's not so easy to find those that have the right strategy and the right exit strategy.
Take a second and give out your contact information, and then I want to make a comment on the subject.
You bet. Our website is largepracticesales.com. Pretty easy to remember. And my email is chip@largepracticesales.com. Also pretty easy to remember.
That is pretty easier than mine.
I'm lucky. I get to talk to, on average, about 10 different doctors a day. And the great thing is I learn something from every doctor I talk to. Because one of the interesting things about dental practice in the U.S. is every single one of them is different. So I'm always excited to talk to dentists and help them understand the invisible DSO option. And really, when you get down to it, I'm in the education business. I want every doctor to at least understand this option, because most doctors don't. Most doctors think of DSOs as the big bad guys who come in and tell you what to do and don't pay enough for your practice and fire your team members. And that's not what the invisible DSOs do. It's a whole different animal, and that's why it's growing so quickly.
So I want to take a second and make a comment on what I'm seeing on the CPA side, Chip. Our CPA firm, Eide Bailly, works with, I don't know the exact number, but we're at or near 1,000 dental practices in our company. And I'm talking to doctors all the time. And here's the phone call, Chip, that I get. It's, hey, Art, I was talking to XYZ DSO, and they're going to offer me blah, blah, blah. And I go, have you signed a letter of intent? They go, no. I say, good, don't. Okay? Because as I understand it, the DSOs know that they can go to doctors without the help of someone like yourself, and they can make a deal that sounds like it's like incredible, but it's not what they can get. And they build into their whole model of buying practices that once someone like you gets involved, you're going to look at this and go, you're going to call that DSO or that invisible DSO up, and you're going to say, all right, so Joe, you're talking to Dr. Smith here. So what are you doing? What are you offering him, you know, X minus 50% for when you know it's his practice is worth Y? And then you start getting involved. Do you see that sometimes?
Oh, no. We have a whole program associated with that. You know, there's so many, like I always say, we're bigger than the next five advisors combined in this business. But our biggest competition is doctors who, for some reason, think they can handle a life-changing transaction.
Yeah, that's what I meant. It's like, that they're doing it on their own.
Yeah, no, that's my biggest competition. And it's really sad because, you know, I can't fix teeth and create beautiful smiles. And unfortunately, there are very few doctors out there who know how to do multi-million dollar life-changing deals by themselves. It's just the reality of having a specialist, right? So what we have a program that basically says, look, if you've already been contacted by an invisible DSO, and if you have an offer from them, send us the offer. And if we can't beat that offer through a proper auction process, net of our fee, you can pay us nothing and we'll help you get the whole transaction closed and make sure it's structured correctly for you at no charge. And we have not yet lost one of those. My favorite story is an ortho in Florida called me up. We had looked at his numbers, so I knew what his value was. And he said, Chip, look, I know I'm not a client, but I'm about to sign a letter of intent with this group that I really like. My friends have gone there. And would you give me some advice as to whether they're good guys or bad guys? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. And I said, but before you tell me who it is or what the offer is, tell me how many bidders you had. How many people did you talk to? He said, oh, just one, these guys. And I was like, okay, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to guarantee you that I can get you $5 million more, or you can pay me nothing. And he's like, that's crazy. You don't know who it is. You don't know what the offer is. I said, it doesn't matter. You're in Florida. You're a big ortho practice making a lot of money. You're going to have 10 qualified bidders. And he said, okay, you put that in writing? And I said, yeah, absolutely. So while we were on the phone, I sent him an email telling him that. And he said, okay, my offer is $19 million and is from XYZ Invisible DSO. And I said, okay, I'm going to change my offer. I said, you're backpedaling. I'm like, no, I know those guys. We've done three deals with them in the last 90 days. I'm going to guarantee I'll get you $29 million or more net of my fee, or you can pay me nothing.
I love it.
So he said, put it in writing and I'll hire you. I put it in writing. He hired us 11 bidders. The initial bidder, with my first call to their CEO, who obviously I knew, I was like, John, this is ridiculous.
What are you doing? That's exactly what I'm saying. What are you doing, buddy? You know this is worth more than that, right?
Right. So on the phone, first call, he raises his bid from 19 to 30 million. And I said, John, you don't even get to come to dinner. And he said, what do you mean? I said, well, you know, we always bring the three top bidders to dinner to meet the doctor. And I said, you won't even get invited to dinner. And he said, okay, I'm done at 30. He's out. So we ended up doing a deal for the doctor at $42.5 million. It was 95% cash, which is really rare in our business. And so the doctor was pretty happy. We made a nice fee. He's still happy today. This was about 2 years ago. But not going through a bidding process is insane. You're going to learn something, if nothing else. So, yeah, we see that all the time.
That's my whole point, doctors, is that these DSOs build into their whole model of acquiring practices the fact that a significant number of doctors are going to try and do this on their own. Again, I don't do commercials for the guests that I have. I don't need to. Chip is as big of an expert in this country in this topic as anybody I know. And but you just need to talk to people. And just my only suggestion is don't sign a letter of intent until you go and see what else is out there. Because every time I get somebody says I'm talking to one, or maybe I'm talking to two. No, you want to be talking, Chip says, what, 10, six at a minimum. I want to get into a little more, Chip, here about kind of the valuation process. We hear we're talking about, you know, 8 times EBITDA, 12 times EBITDA, 1,000 times EBITDA. Okay, Can you talk about in, you know, high level, because we only have a certain amount of time on the podcast here, you know, what is EBITDA and what are you seeing in the marketplace? And how do you guys come up with an EBITDA for a dental practice?
Great question. So in short form, EBITDA is revenues minus expenses minus the owner-doctor compensation and adding back any expenses associated with interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. When a doctor calls their CPA, like you, and says, not like you, because you know the answer to this question, but they call their typical local CPA, who's not a dental expert, and say, hey, what's my EBITDA? And the CPA comes back with, well, you took home $1 million last year, so that's your EBITDA. And when the doctors tell me that, I go, did your CPA remember to pay you? He's like, well, what do you mean? Well, you got a great practice, $2 million in collections. You took home $1 million last year. But here's how that breaks down. They've got to pay you 35% of that $2 million in collections as your compensation for doing dentistry. And so that means your business, after paying you for doing what you do, really had an EBITDA of $300,000. Yep, you took home $1 million last year, but $700,000 of that was for doing dentistry and $300,000 of that was your business profit. Now, calculating EBITDA is an interesting exercise because all of the invisible DSOs do it differently. And when I say differently, some, for example, will give you credit when calculating your EBITDA for the differential between their cost of things and your cost of things. So if you're paying $280 for a Straumann implant, they're paying $110 for that same implant. And so they'll give you the benefit when calculating your EBITDA of that $170 savings. Now, not all of them do that, and you've got to know where to look and how to ask to make sure they do that. But we see that across the board. The calculations of EBITDA vary based on who's doing the calculating. So it is an art, not a science. And obviously, our goal is to achieve the highest EBITDA possible for our clients because that's going to get them the highest value. And we get paid a percentage of the value our clients achieve. So we're always eager to drive up EBITDA and argue with the invisible DSOs over how it's being calculated.
So let me ask you this. I mean, are you seeing the EBITDAs? You said the EBITDAs are higher with the invisible DSOs because we have, you know, we have private money, family business money coming in. Very, very wealthy people putting billions of dollars into this process. I mean, for a general dental practice, like you gave the example, if my EBITDA is $300,000, I mean, and again, I know it's all over the board. Are you seeing, I mean, 5 times EBITDA, 6 times? I know it depends, but is there a range that we can talk about here?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a $300,000 EBITDA practice is going to have trouble getting interest from many invisible DSOs because it's relatively small. Our threshold for taking new clients is a practice with $500,000 and more in EBITDA. And so when you've got $500,000 or more in EBITDA, we haven't done a transaction in probably 2 years at less than 7 times EBITDA. But again, really? Our clients are going to have at least $500,000 in EBITDA. And then it goes up from there. We just did one at 11 times EBITDA for a practice with $5 million in EBITDA. So it was a $55 million deal. But depending on your practice, where you are, how old you are, and most importantly, how fast you're growing, you know, a kind of normal EBITDA range today is going to be between 7 and 8.5. And if you've got, you know, $5 million in EBITDA, it's going to go up from there. And if you're a pedo, ortho, or oral surgeon at the moment, it could be even higher.
Yeah, I've seen that too.
It's changing, but we're still we've set record values in the last 90 days for every type of doctor, with the exception of endos. And we got pretty close on the endos. We were just about a tenth of a point off on a new record for endos.
It's like my golf score. You know, it's close at tenth, right?
Well, you know, if you get the right practice, there's no shortage of bidders today. The key is you need to be younger and you need to be growing.
So if I have a doctor that says, gee, I don't want to work 3 to 5 years. I want to just sell to a DSO and get all these multiples and leave. Doesn't work that way, does it?
No, it really doesn't. You know, if a doctor, and it depends on how many doctors are in the practice. When you have a multi-doctor practice,
right,
and
that's
one
a different
doctor
conversation.
Wants to retire, that's doable. But we see a lot of, you know, and I'll be 64 next week, so I'm old. And the problem is a 64 single doctor practice, I can't help today. I can't help at achieving these kind of values. The doctor, if he has an associate, great. Then we're going to look at how much of the production is being done by the associate versus the owner doctor. But age has become a really big issue. And it's, I urge doctors to look at this and have a plan when they still have a five in front of their age. Now, if you've got multiple associates that are young and they're doing the majority of your production, not an issue. But a single doctor practice with a six in front of them, it's tough. Doable sometimes, but it's tough.
Even if that doctor says, hey, I feel great, I work out every day, and I want to work five more years, that even with that?
We're going to tell you we can't help you because I'm not going to be able to bring six qualified bidders for that doctor.
Got it.
And okay. I have these discussions every day. And
no,
it's challenging, but that's relatively new because what happened is during COVID, you had a lot of the older doctors hang it up. And even those who work for the invisible DSOs or the DSOs, they're just like, nope, I don't need to do this anymore. And so the invisible DSOs have become very, very careful about the age of the doctors they partner with.
Okay. Let's talk about the recapitalization market. I know that it's changed. It probably changes every week in your life. Of the people that have done deals in the last two or three years that have said, you know what, I'm not going to keep a percentage of my practice. I'm going to put it all into the mothership, or I'm going to put part of it into the mothership. How are the motherships doing these days? Are the doctors that have done this over the last two, three, 4 years, are there recapitalization events? Are there a large percentage that are just saying, hey, because of the marketplace, we can't get you what we thought we'd get you? What's happening in the recapitalization market these days?
You know, it's a great question. And the answer is it's a flight to quality. So during 2023, you had a number of the lesser quality invisible DSOs attempt recapitalizations, and they were not successful for reasons including doctors that were too old, their integration process had not created value within the practice, because you know what's optimally valuable in a recapitalization is the growth rate of existing practices, meaning the organic growth. Not how many practices did you buy last year, it's what have you done for the practices that you partnered with. So we saw a number of mid-sized invisible DSOs attempt to recapitalize in 2023. Fortunately, none of them we had partnered any of our clients with who pulled their recapitalizations because they didn't like the values they were getting. But on the other hand, you had dozens of them actually get new capital last year because they were properly managed. They were growing organically. And there'll be a couple more big invisible DSOs recapitalized in the next 120 days. And fortunately, we have dozens and dozens of our clients that are in them. So the answer is recapitalizations are absolutely still happening. BlackRock did one in December for a trifecta group, pedo, ortho, oral surgery. And there are others in process. But if you're not a quality invisible DSO, you need to fix yourself so that you can recapitalize because they are having real challenges getting deals done.
I know we talked a little bit about earlier that there are some DSOs and maybe some IDS, invisible DSOs, that are in trouble right now. I mean, they started out and they were doing great and then the money dried up. Do you see a good number of these groups who have put groups together that are maybe even folding or that are in serious financial trouble?
They're absolutely not folding because they have practices that are generating revenues every day. And, you know, on average, except for the ortho guys, they're still flat anyways, maybe not growing. But we're seeing those that are having their credit lines yanked. So they're not able to partner with new groups, which means they're not growing, which means they're not increasing the equity value for them or their doctor partners. So yeah, that's absolutely an issue today. And all of those guys are obviously on our blacklist. However, I don't see any that are collapsing, that are failing, because typically they're able to go back to their lenders and investors and restructure their obligations. And the good ones will restructure their obligations and get access to capital to continue growing, because that's the only way you create value. And others have not yet been successful in getting their lenders and investors to acquiesce to that. So it's a if you've got a quality invisible DSO, you're going to recapitalize at a great value, and deals are happening. But if you have a lower quality invisible DSO that is not growing and does not have organic growth, you got a problem. They're not failing, but you're not going to realize the phenomenal gains that are possible.
So let's say I've got a doctor that we talked about earlier who is trying to, you know, do this on their own with one DSO. They've signed a letter of intent, and then they listen to this podcast and they say, oops. Is it too late once you've signed a letter of intent?
No, absolutely not. The nice thing about a letter of intent is the only real binding element of any traditional letter of intent is you are bound not to shop your asset, or in this case, your dental practice, to other buyers while your letter of intent recipient is going through their due diligence process. But every letter of intent has a right for the doctor to terminate that letter of intent. And without, I'd say 99% of the time, without any financial penalty. A letter of intent is just binding the parties to do due diligence on each other and head towards a closing. So no, if you've already signed a letter of intent, it's not too late. And I've had a number of them who've signed letters of intent and call me and go, I've done this, what do you think? And I'll be honest with them. In some cases, I'll say, well, that DSO is on our blacklist. And the reason it's on our blacklist is X, Y, and Z. So you may want to continue down the path to do a deal with them, and you may not.
Yeah, and that's the idea, is you want to give them choices and things like that. So if I have my doctor who's in the middle of this process, and they need to find an attorney who specializes in working with DSOs. The average garden variety corporate attorney is not the person you want representing you and looking at the legal documents, right?
No, and it's the same thing with CPAs. I mean, our transactions are so much smoother when we work with CPAs like you who actually understand dentistry. And unfortunately, that's not always the case. And the lawyers are the same thing. We see, you know, what we do is for our clients, we will recommend them to lawyers that have represented our clients in hundreds of deals. And we will recommend them to the lawyer that has done a deal with the invisible DSO partner that our client has chosen. Because that way the lawyers can quote the doctor a flat fee. They know exactly what to expect because they've done multiple deals with that invisible DSO. And that's very valuable. So just like with CPAs, lawyers, you want to use lawyers and CPAs that have focused on dentistry.
So what if someone is doing this on their own and they just are going to go down the road? What mistakes should they avoid? What should they be looking at? What can we give them some guidance on if they're kind of out there by themselves?
You know, it's never too late to get an advisor. And I'm always happy to help doctors wherever they are in the process, because I think it wins me friends and gets me referrals down the road. But, you know, there are a lot of different elements. A lot of what's happening today is the invisible DSOs are offering the doctors equity that really has no upside. And sometimes they call it preferred equity, but it has no conversion feature. So there's no upside in that equity. And there are other groups that are actually using the practice as collateral to go borrow the money, to give the doctor the money, and then asking the doctor to co-sign on the loan. It's crazy.
Oh, I have. I think there's one group that has them co-sign on all the loans that they have. That's what I.
Yeah, it's crazy. And you want to steer away from those groups. You know, so the capital structure of your partner and the deal they're offering you need to understand it. Because there's a lot of flim-flam going on in that right now. Second issue is the tax allocation negotiation. Tax allocation is really important in these deals. And so we'll often see doctors who are doing these deals direct agree to a tax allocation, you know, 50-50, where it's 50% goodwill, 50% hard assets.
Wait a minute. I'm not feeling well right now when you just said 50-50. Ooh.
And you're in California, so it's really bad. But no, we've got sort of a proven methodology to eliminate that fight. We agree to it with the invisible DSO up front. And I'm not going to give away our trade secrets, but I can tell you that 94% of the cash received by our doctors in the last $1 billion of transactions has been treated as goodwill and therefore long-term cap gains.
Now I feel bad. The body has stopped shaking. I'm no longer about my tears are not coming out of both of my eyes, Chip. So that makes me feel much better. 94% is better than I usually get in a private doctor. So I want to make one comment about the tax part. So doctors, you need to be really careful about this, especially if you don't have a CPA or an attorney who works in this space. So let's say that you sell your practice and Chip gets you, if you're working with Chip, he's probably going to get you the right people who know how this works. But when you go ahead and you purchase and you receive part of the mothership, and that's the ownership and the entity that owns all the other practices, say it's a partnership or an LLC, okay? If your contract says, Chip, I'm going to pull a number out of the air. Let's say that my total sales price for the practice is $5 million. And $1 million of it is going into the mothership, okay? If the contract says that Dr. Wiederman is getting $1 million of valuation of the mothership, okay? Because remember, you're getting $1 million valuation of the mothership, but you're not getting $1 million. You can't turn around and sell that valuation the day after. It's not saleable. If you put that in the contract, you're going to pay tax on that $1 million. What you generally end up doing is you end up, instead of that, is you're making a capital contribution of your personal goodwill to that partnership. And if it's a corporation, there's 83B issue. We don't have time to go into that here. But the bottom line is, doctors, is, and I helped a specialty group save tax on $2 million of equity a couple of years ago. We need to make sure that the contract doesn't show. Because if the contract shows you're getting $4 million cash, $1 million equity in the mothership. If the contract says that the sales price is $5 million, you're paying tax on $5 million, but how much money did you get? You got $4 million. And you got equity in the mothership that you really can't do anything with. You got to be careful. So that's just something I wanted to point out. We're coming to the end of our time. Time flies when you're having fun, and you know your information is spot on. It's great. I want my listeners to know what's going on in the market. And at the end of the day, guys, it's, you got to peel the onion back. You got to think about the why you're doing this. Any final comments you want to make, and then I'll take the podcast out if you'll stay with me until I finish.
Yeah, I just really think that every dentist, whether they're interested in having a partner or not, should at least understand this, because it's coming to a community near you. And you need to understand how you're going to compete with folks that are paying 25% less for everything than you are, with the exception of wages. And you need to understand how they approach their market and what they do. And you know, I love to have conversations with doctors, and they're always educational for both of us. So I urge every doctor, contact us. Let's have a conversation. Worst case, though, what I always promise is you're going to learn something.
Well, listen, Chip Fitzner, you are an expert in your field. One more time, give out your email. I think you gave out your website and the way to get a hold of you if they're interested.
Yep. Largepracticesales.com. And I am Chip, like a potato chip or a computer chip, at largepracticesales.com. And let's have a conversation.
Sounds good. Thank you, Chip. Hang on as I take the podcast out. Thank you for the honor and privilege of your time, everyone. I really appreciate it. Our audience grows. We have thousands of people who download our podcast every month. Please tell your friends about our podcast. Please tell your friends and take a look at our partners' website, Decisions in Dentistry Magazine, www.decisionsindentistry.com, 140 continuing education courses at a very reasonable price, plus three courses, which are Art Wiederman's courses. They're live, they're taped video courses on Art's Golden Rules, on metrics, and on retirement planning. Again, www.decisionsindentistry.com. decisionsindentistry.com. If you're looking for a dental CPA, please call me 657-279-3243 and A. Wiederman, W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N at idbailey.com. And with that, folks, we will call it a podcast. This is Art Wiederman for the Art of Dental Finance and Management with Art Wiederman, CPA. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss an episode. The Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast is produced by Ide Bailey in partnership with Art Wiederman, CPA, Decisions in Dentistry Magazine, and the Academy of Dental CPAs. For audience questions and feedback, email Art Wiederman, awiederman at idebailey.com. That's A-W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N at E-I-D-E-B-A-I-L-L-Y.com. Or you may call Art at 657-279-3243.